to the Atomic Weight of Cheese with your hosts, Mike Bakkelman, Chad Plambeck, and Steph Romansky.
Pages later to go.
Okay.
And the funniest thing about that book is, you know, the behind the scenes stuff of like the projects he was working on is pretty good. But what I find most fascinating is life in Oregon.
Yeah, that's some interesting stuff.
To me, that's the best part of the book.
Yeah.
You know, he tried to get his house in order and
he
then
has a whole
on
chapter
and,
on grading his yeah. Driveway.
Yeah. And being a cowboy. I just thought that was funny.
Yeah.
And was it lavender? He's growing lavender.
Yeah, he's
for
growing
people,
lavender.
Making soap. And
this is, yeah, speaking of which, welcome to the Atomic Weight of Cheese, where cult cinema is real life and real life is frequently cult cinema. I'm Mike.
I'm Steph.
And I think I'm going to burp a lot.
Oh, boy. This is going to be fun.
I shouldn't have drank that root beer.
Sorry.
I'll try and edit them out.
Or, you know, leave them in and, like, just add them sporadically.
Maybe that could be our sensor beeping for this episode.
Burp.
Here, I'll chug some. I'll see if I can get us one. No.
There's some incentive to swear more. Okay. Sorry, Steph. So today, we're just going to dive right into this.
Circling back.
There is no natural way to transition from that conversation into anything. We decided to talk a little bit about formative film experiences, and we're hoping this is a thing where this will get you, the listener, thinking about what it was that got you into what you're into, or things that you used to love, you know, as a kid that formed and shaped the person culturally that you've grown up into. So formative film experiences is the basic idea. And when I was looking at this, I really had to like chop it up into blocks. Like, it's okay, so what was like earliest thing you remember? What was the first movie you remember just kind of loving unabashedly? What was the first movie you watched 50 times? Something that kids today do not do. Mm-hmm. What was, you know, and I went all the way up to what's like something modern that's shaped your, you know, that's helped shape your sensibilities. And it really is kind of weird to know where to start, because you do it chronologically and it may make sense, it may not make sense. You do it, you know, based on what you like now, it might not make sense. So what I'm saying in a long way is I'm not sure where to start.
Well, how about earliest memories?
Okay, we can do chronological. We can go from front to back,
okay.
Or back to front.
Sure.
Or, however that works. You know, time is a thing. It's wibbly-wobbly. Okay, so Steph, you brought it up. So earliest thing you can remember watching?
Burp. For me, it was stuff. It was a lot of stuff on TV, like TV movies. And the earliest one that just popped into my head first thing was The Hobbit.
Ooh, the Bakshi Hobbit cartoon.
Yes,
yeah.
That's it. And I remember loving it, being afraid of that Gollum.
No, check that. That was Rankin Bass.
Oh, that was Rankin Bass. Bass. You're right.
Bass. It's Bakshi did Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But being afraid of that particular version of Gollum.
That was
freaky. He was creepy as hell.
He didn't have any pupils.
No.
If I remember right, it was just like
voice.
Big white eyes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But even back then, it's like to me, it was like I felt sorry for him.
My precious. It is my precious. Hello, my precious. Blesses and splashes. Food for my precious.
And I thought, you know, Frodo was a dirty, stinking cheat who stole the ring from this poor, pitiful creature, so.
I never gained sympathy for Gollum from that age, you know, and I read the book in, I think, seventh grade. It was part of a class thing, and then I kind of understood his character.
Yeah, that cartoon came before the book for me, too.
So that's one of my earliest memories, and then it gets into stuff like with my dad was a big movie freak, and was, as previously mentioned on another podcast, a big beta freak.
Oh, beta.
We got movies like Gone with the Wind or Around the World in 80 Days, or what's the other one that's got a bunch of words repeated in it?
It's a mad world.
Yeah. And stuff like that. So that's what I kind of grew up on as I, you know, became a teenager. So.
And do you think that influenced you at all?
Yeah. I mean, because I think it opened up a love of Tolkien for me, that the Hobbit movie, because I loved the movie, but I was afraid of Gollum. That's all, because I was five or something.
Well, that whole movie, just the way it's styled, is kind of scary to modern audiences. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
No, yeah. Andrew, was that Richard Boone, a Smaug?
Yeah.
Dragon. Well, mm-hmm. I just thought that was really cool.
Yeah, and I would watch it alone in my parents' room on that TV because they were, you know, doing their thing. But so I was immersed.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't have a baby sister yet to bug me and annoy me.
And like I said, you get to the Battle of Five Armies at the end. It's like, geez, most of the people we met along the way, they're all dead.
Yeah.
It's a little dark, you know. And
exactly.
So it was quite mentally prepared for that.
And I'm sure as a parent, you would think, oh, The Hobbit, this is literature. Oh, here's scary pupilless ivy creature coming at you.
There comes the big spider. Ah!
Oh, God, yeah.
But I did love the Riddles in the Dark sequence.
Sure.
Always loved.
There's
it was it Brother Theodore, I think, was Gollum in that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and so.
Yeah, he's creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
How about you, Chad? What do you remember?
Well, it's kind of the same. You were talking about formative stuff. To me, it's like I remember the first late movie that I got to stay up and watch with my brothers, and that was a movie called Killdozer.
We don't know anything for a fact.
Clint Walker. Except that bulldozer kills. Carl Betts. Two men dead. The survivors watch an unmanned bulldozer continue its rampage. Killdozer.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
With the, why can't I think of his name?
Well, Robert Urich. Clint Walker's the hero. And I said, yeah, the basic gist of that story is a meteor crashes on. It's based on a Theodore Sturgeon book. And a meteor crashes on Earth, and some kind of sentient ions possesses this bulldozer that goes on a killing rampage on this remote Pacific island, and basically takes out the whole crew. And how that bulldozer kept managing to sneak up on people, this 30-ton diesel-powered piece of machinery, I will never know. But it's like, yeah. So I think that kind of went a long way in formative my bent taste in films and stuff, because I just remember these scenes where the killdozer was laughing and it was rocking its blade back and forth, and it's like, this is great.
Didn't Conan O'Brien contact you about that movie once?
This is my near brush with infamy here. They contacted me, wanted to know if I had a copy of the movie, because Robert Urich was going to be on the show. And so, yeah, I did. I sent them stuff. They sent me some, like, a T-shirt and an autographed picture. But, the episode was supposed to tape and air on September 11th.
Oh!
And so it never happened.
Shoot. Did you get your video back?
Yeah. Or no, I just, like I said, I dubbed it and sent it to him.
Oh, I see.
And, so that was kind of a bummer.
That's, shoot.
I know.
Oh, that would have been so much fun.
Yeah.
What
well,
about you?
Yeah, the first... the first like kid movie I remember is Disney's Robin Hood, and I remember loving that movie intensely.
Yeah.
You know, I don't say it was formative in that it's still my favorite Robin Hood, and it didn't turn me into a furry or anything. But I still really enjoy that movie.
No, that chicken was awful cute.
Yeah, a lady cluck.
Lady
you know?
Cluck.
Yeah, ran at the rhino with a golden arrow and poked him in the butt. Long live King Richard! Bye! They have to drag her back into the forest. Yeah, I love that. It's a great movie. I could quote that movie. Yeah. But yeah, I like that one. But the first like cult thing I remember, my dad wasn't... was in a doctorate program when I was like kindergarten, first, second, third grade, right? And wasn't around a whole lot. So whenever we got to hang out, that was cool. And I remember one point we made tomato soup and watched Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And I remember that one episode where the guy is, I'm going to screw this up, but I think he was in like a car wreck and was in a coma, but was still conscious and went through like all the stages of... what being a body is like. Mm-hmm. So basically it's shot from his POV and people would come over and go, oh, what a mess, poor guy, you know, and then they put the sheet over him and the whole time his internal monologue is going I might be screwing this up. It might be an Outer Limits. It might be something else. I'm not, you know, in the amorphous part of my brain, I'm not sure exactly what it was, but I remember the story. And I remember at the end of the story, this guy had an enemy, and the enemy realized he was alive in there and kept him in there, and that was like the twist. It's like, haha, you're alive, but everyone thinks you're dead, and I'm just going to shut you in this cabinet. Ha ha ha. And that was the end of the thing. And I remember it terrifying me, and I've never eaten tomato soup since.
Really?
Yeah. I take it back. I've had like a bisque, I think, you know, and, but like
not
just
quite the same.
Straight Campbell's tomato soup. I've never had it since, you know, but I remember watching that and it just freaking me the burp out.
Yep.
To no end. Yep. And, it must have been like a redo or something because I remember it in color. I might be remembering it wrong again. I was probably too young to be watching Revenge, This Guy's a Body.
Well, it could have been like the revival of Albert Hitchcock.
Yeah, it might have been.
There was the revival show, so.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things. And then, of course, I've gone back and looked for it, never found it. But Alfred Hitchcock Presents has more than enough to be interesting.
Sure.
You know, to, anyway, but yeah, that's about as early as I remember is Robin Hood and something I really shouldn't have been watching. You know, that sort of thing. So, okay, so we're out of childhood. You move into teenagerdom, and you're to the point where
I still got a lot from my childhood.
Oh, you still got
all
right, hit it. Hit it.
Yeah, yeah.
It just reminded me of my mom took me to see Young Frankenstein.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Good. Good. What is it? What's the matter? Quick, give him the... Quick, give him the...
Watch, give him the watch. Three syllables. First syllable sounds like
head. Sounds like head. Bed. Said.
Said. Said.
Said. Second syllable. Little third. This, that, the.
Said.
Said.
Dirty word. He said a dirty word.
Sounds like. To give.
Said, said, give. Give him a said a give.
Oh, Tim, said a Tim.
On the nosey. Oh. Set a give?
And I, that's one of my all-time, it's in my top five, you know, even today. And also, a little bit later, High Anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
Mel Brooks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And,
High Anxiety.
Yeah, Silver Streak.
You and, oh, Gene Wilder.
Silver Streak, yeah. Yep. Love, I mean, I just, I don't know, I've always, then for the rest of my life, I've loved Gene Wilder and pretty much anything. And, of course, you know, that. But yeah, now that we're talking about it, memories are
happening. This is perfect. We hope this is happening to the listener that you're like, oh, I remember the movie.
Right.
Okay, Chad, what do you got?
Okay, well, this is back in the 70s, and this is okay. I'm gonna set this up a little bit. This was like right after my dad died, and I was kind of in my own head and freaking out a little bit about death at the time.
As you would do.
And some friends of mine took me to a matinee. It was a re-release of Jason and the Argonauts.
Ooh,
Ray Harryhausen.
That's a good movie.
And the thing that I remember most about that, you know, aside from being, you know, fascinated by the special effects work and
the Harryhausen stuff.
The Harryhausen, you know, the harpies, Talos, the Children of the Highway, you know, the skeletons breaking out of the ground. You know, and my jaw hitting the floor, just edging up in your seat the whole time. You have no idea why you got up there. And it's like, this is awesome. But it was just like, you know, for an hour and a half, I didn't think about death.
Now, from the makers of Sinbad, Columbia Pictures presents Jason and the Argonauts. The mightiest band of warriors the world has ever known.
Turn back, Jason. We're trapped.
Sailing to the ends of the earth. Battling against an incredible number of obstacles.
Where will you find this miracle?
I have heard there is a tree at the end of the world with a fleece of gold hanging in its branches.
In search of the fabulous magic golden fleece, Jason and the Argonauts, caught in the clutches of the towering bronze giant Talos, battered by treacherous falling rocks, taming vulturous harpies, facing the dreaded seven-headed Hydra. Battling the merciless army of skeletons. Jason and the Argonauts, the classic story of Jason, a man who challenged the gods. Medea, a temple dancer who betrayed a kingdom for love. The Argonauts, the mightiest band of warriors the world has ever known. Jason and the Argonauts, a classic adventure story, brought to the screen through the incredible special effects magic of Dinorama. Jason and the Argonauts. The search that became a legend.
And it just got me, and it, I think it kind of got me over a hump, the hump, because this is just before, you know, Star Wars came out. And so that, like I said, I think that movie helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it's like, you know what? I'm going to be a stop-motion animator when I grow up.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Hollywood, and I'm going to make me some monsters. And how I wound up here, I don't know. It's up to
in
much.
In the cheese bunker.
In the cheese bunker. It's up to much conjecture and wailing and gnashing.
That movie is, that's a full-throated adventure movie, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unapologetic. That's just, you know, you buy the skeletons right away.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good movie.
Like I said, the funniest thing is, you know, the skeletons are great and Harryhausen's work is great, but actually, like, one of my favorite effects in that whole movie is when, like, the mirror man comes out of the water and holds the crashing cliffs back as the boat goes sailing under his armpit, you know? And I just think that's great.
Yep, I remember that. See, my one like that was Clash of the Titans, the original with
sure,
Harry Hamlin.
Yeah.
And same base, you know, but my father's still alive. But, I mean, you know, same basic, I love that movie because it, you know, it opened up the where effects could go,
mm-hmm.
even though, you know, effects were doing what they did, yeah. I remember, too, one of the other ones that knocked me over when I was a kid like that was Little Shop of Horrors.
Sure.
I remember watching that a whole bunch, and, man, it's how scary, you know, I don't want to put it like that, but it's like, it's weird for a kid to be obsessed with a musical. How about that?
Again. Come on, I haven't got much left. Just give me a few days to heal, okay? Then we'll start again on the left
Feed
hand and...
me.
I beg your pardon?
Feed me!
Tui, you talked! You opened your trap, you thing, and you said...
Feed me, Crabhorn! Feed me now!
I can't!
I'm starving!
Look, maybe I can squeeze a little more out of this one.
More, 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 more!
There isn't any more! What do you want me to do, slip my wrists? Oh, boy! Look, I got an idea. I'm gonna go down to Schmendrick's and pick you up some nice chopped sirloin.
Must be blood.
Tui, that's disgusting.
Must be fresh.
I don't want to hear this.
Feed me.
Does it have to be human?
Feed me.
Does it have to be mine?
Feed me.
Where am I supposed to get it?
Feed me, Seymour.
And, but I love that, and I love that creature. That creature was like one of the first things, the Audrey 2, when it got big, was one of the first ones like, oh my God, that's amazing. I've never seen anything like that, and I love it so much. And,
nice.
And, I wanted to be Rick Moranis maybe when I grew up then, and maybe kind of got there except for the acting, you know.
Yep.
Cool.
I was like, you talk about like old TV shows or whatever. The one thing that I remember, I think when I was a kid, that sort of turned me on to old movies and old cinema, and where I kind of fell in love with it when you're living out in the sticks and you only got like four stations, was Matinee at the Bijou, which is on our PBS affiliate, which basically was like a Saturday afternoon thing, and they just show some old movies. And I think
was that the Lorraine Newman thing?
No. That's on my list, too. That's later.
That's later. Okay.
No, this is like classical movies, not monster movies, horror movies, or whatever. I think that's the first time I saw like Billy Wilder's Five Graves of Cairo and The Bad and the Beautiful and movies like this. And it's like, at a young age, it's like, boy, this is kind of neat. I just kind of like to use this. These people are beautiful, and this is wonderful, and I think I'm going to keep watching. So.
I'm going to go off on a tangent. For a second.
Okay.
Last night, I worked at our historic Grand Theater, just a few blocks away from the cheese bunker, and they showed the 1977 Superman. And I knew the evening was not going to be terribly fun when a bunch of people walked in and said, what's the movie? And we would point to that, and they would go, oh, an old movie, and turn around and walk out. I'm like, okay, that's rough.
Oh, wow.
Then about 150 people, you know, a little bit more maybe, showed up, and there were walkouts. Man, people, they couldn't take the pacing, they couldn't take the cheesy effects, and it, you know, but by
effects
our standards, no, they're not. That movie was super influenced by 2001. I didn't realize it until I watched it last night. Like, oh my God, someone saw 2001, and this is Richard Donner's 2001, and it's got a superhero in the middle of it. It's a weird thing, but oh, it broke my heart the way
kids. Bah!
It's like, come on, well, there is a lot of great stuff in this movie if you just pay attention a little bit, you know? And yes, it's 220, and yes, it's super cheesy, but oh my God, this movie is great. What are you doing? Okay, tangent over.
That's okay.
So, wow. Anyway.
That is depressing.
Yeah, it kind of depressed me a little
bit. I'm old!
Although I gotta say, I rewatched that recently, and it doesn't hold up that well. I liked it when it came out. I remember enjoying it, and Lois Clark was awesome, you know, and quite a role model and everything, but...
Can we agree that Christopher Reeves was the bomb diggity?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
That dude,
but
he pulled it off.
Yeah, but rewatching it as an adult, it's like, that would never, that doesn't work.
No. I had to stop myself from cheering when Lex Luthor looked down at the map and said, Otisburg.
It's a little place.
Otisburg.
Miss Tessbacher's got her own.
Oh, made me so happy. Okay, tangent over.
Okay, so we're moving into our teens now.
We could jump ahead and say what was kind of the formative film thing that that kind of got you into movies, art, whatever. Sure. Unless Night you have Flight. Other things for kids that you want to jump into.
Night Flight. It was like USA's Up All Night, but it was called Night Flight, and they showed movies like Andy Warhol's Dracula.
Ooh.
That's where I first learned of Night of the Comet, which is another top five fave, and Gothic with Julian.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sands. Ken Russell.
Julian
right?
Sands. Yeah.
Julian Sands
yeah.
and other people.
Julian Sands is yeah. all you need.
But I remember being that one. I was like, as a teenager whose hormones are going a little crazy, that one was like, oh my.
There's a world out there where people are different than the people I'm around all day.
Yeah. And I was living in the Midwest too. So I had that going on, and it was a time when I was bullied, so watching movies like that, and you know, I had to sneak to stay up to watch Night Flight, but it was every Friday night, and it always showed weird movies that I'd never heard of, but gave a chance, and they're still, you know, part of my brain today.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I know, like CBS used to run like late movies after the news, and I remember like sneaking out and watching a lot of stuff.
So real quick stuff. How do you think that formed the stuff you like now?
I think it made me more open to seeing movies that weren't, you know, the top movie of the day kind of thing. You know, it made me open to seeing stuff like...
just different stuff. It just opened your mind.
It opened my mind a little bit. And
just it get made out of the mainstream.
Me, yeah, and it made me realize that, you know, movies don't have to be $80 million blockbuster action things to get my attention. While I like those, I also like the quiet little movies or the movies that are just, whoa, that's really out there.
Yeah.
You know, and it just made me, feel more open.
Cool.
Nice.
You know, that I've, again, tangent alert, but that's part of but that's part of my fear with what's going on right now is that it's, yes, you have everything open to you via the internet. And when you have everything, how do you curate stuff that you might like? You know, how do you stumble across something you might like, especially when there are tech companies trying to shove stuff that they know you like at you as fast as you can?
Yeah, well, good point.
Anymore, as like I said, you walk out to that Superman movie with all that stuff available, it is really easy. It's like, stop it.
Yeah.
Well, what's next?
Yeah.
You know, what's next? And you don't have time to just sit down, watch something, absorb something, think about something. There's just, your brain is being programmed to think at 5 billion miles an hour. Mm-hmm. And like I said, there is no time to process anything.
Yeah,
and I find myself rewatching stuff I already like because nothing appeals.
Right.
Because I don't know anything about these movies. Whereas if it's something that you have recommended to me, I'm more likely to watch that. But otherwise, I'm rewatching.
I know. I'm still watching. I'm just like watching Laughing, or I'm watching old episodes of Emergency,
exactly.
Just because, you know.
And that's okay to a degree, but I mean, I'm if I can jump into mine real quick, it's like I remember, and I, given that, okay, I'm going to say my formative, the thing that got me into art in general is Pulp Fiction, and I hate to say that because Quentin Tarantino is a noted douchebag, and he has since turned into somebody that I don't want to be associated with his movies anymore, if that makes sense.
I can intrude for a minute. Him and his films, to me, was formative too, because that opened me to all this stuff. It's like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. And to me, it's like, this is a and.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and so it's like, you don't have to like the newest trendy thing or whatever, you know, because I watched this like, I saw this in this other movie. I was like, this is pastiche. He's very good at it.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong.
He's the first mixed master director.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like I said, he's very, very good at it. But still, he's lifting ideas. And everybody thinks he's so original. And it's like, not really.
No, he's not really original. But I had not been exposed to any of those movies.
Sure.
So I'm still like mainstream. You know, I'm like 14 years old and hadn't been exposed to any of that. So the idea of something out of sequence was radical. And I remember seeing it the first time. And it's like, I hate this. I hate it. And then it stuck in my head. I'm like, oh, why do I hate it? And I went back and saw it not dozens, but many, many times in the theater, and ended up just loving it to death and seeking out other stuff. And of course, that goes to, you know, Reservoir Dogs, which then goes to another director, which then, which then can branch out down the
City
line.
City on Fire. Yeah. Anyway.
Tarantino led me to David Lynch, who led me to, you know, other stuff. And it's like,
and that's one of the things I really do give him credit for, mm-hmm. is he opened a door to a lot of more obscure titles that people went and sought mm-hmm. out, which I think is a great thing.
Yep. So. And that was my experience. And that's why I credit Pulp Fiction with being that formative thing, because, man, I don't like Quentin Tarantino nearly mm-hmm. as much anymore. But during that time when I was 15, 16 years old, that was mind-blowing, sure. you know, and just not just that, but like the content and the out of sequence and the characters and the way the characters talked and the way that, you know, the way the camera worked. I actually remember a Siskel and Ebert thing where Siskel and Ebert sat for an hour with the movie and said, here's what it does well. And I remember watching that and that being really formative. It's like the hallway scene in particular at the very beginning. It's like, oh, the camera wants to follow the action, but these guys want to be over here talking about foot massages and all the rest of it and how it worked. And it's like, it jump started. And to your point, it's like, and I'm going to go to Hollywood and be a filmmaker. No, it didn't
work out. But, and here we are.
Yeah, and here we are. But that's okay. It's not depressing. Yep. Things are just fine. But Pulp Fiction was the gateway. It got me there.
That's great.
What about you?
Okay, this is probably taking a little setup too, because I'm a monster kid.
Yep.
Grew up on monsters. But the thing is, you know, at the time, Jason and Argonauts aside, we're kind of living in a vacuum. I mean, by this time, you know, there were no horror hosts anymore. You know, the creature features are basically dead, killed by Saturday Night Live.
Boo.
And, you know, so all you're doing is reading about them in books and looking at these pictures in magazines, and that's it. That's the only way you could see these things. And then in 1982, there was a movie came out called It Came from Hollywood.
So what's this movie about, man?
Oh, it's about all kinds of things, man. It's like a bunch of crazy movies, man, they put together. It's like the Incredible Shrinking Man versus the 50-foot woman, and then try to get it on.
No, man! Remember all those movies about brains? That's what it's about! Brains!
Don't listen to them. Come on, I'm the one plugged in. Let me tell you what it is. It's youth, it's fun, it's everything you, the audience, is about. And there's dirty parts, too.
This movie is about movies that have scary monsters in them. And the monsters come and they smash you. And they get you right there. And then a great big alligator comes and gets you right by the throat in this movie like that. And you can't get away. Ah!
I've heard of this. Okay, I don't think
and
I've
this
ever
was
it.
Just like a showcase. It was a bunch of comedians. It was like Dan Aykroyd, John Candy, Cheech and Chong, and Gilda Radner. And it was basically a clip show. And they basically would walk you through. And it was like broken down into subject matters. It was like all these old movies about monsters and giants and little people and getting high and everything. So it was like clips from, you know, The Brain from the Planet Eros, Reefer Madness, you know, things like that. And for someone who had only read about these things, to finally see these monsters in motion and working and going. And it's like, this is amazing. And then at the end of it, They like scrolled through. There was like 60 films that were sort of featured in the clips, and it's like, and they're like, you make a vow. It's like, I am going to see every one of these movies, and you know, I think I went back and I looked, and I think I'm down to like 3 that I haven't seen.
Oh, cool,
yet.
That's nice.
And so, as I said, yeah, and I think that just sort of reinforced kind of what was there already. And then right when that movie came out, and that kind of started like the VHS boom and the home video boom, so like you had access to this stuff.
And
now,
thank God for it.
Exactly, yeah. And it just kind of devoured it. And so
that
it sort of
opened up the path for like Tales from the Crypt,
right?
And Elvira,
right? And because there was another show that kind of came after that, and this was like right before Mystery Science Theater, and it was called, this is the Lorraine Newman one.
Yeah,
it was called the Cannes Film Festival.
That's what it was. Yeah,
and it was basically just like the small town theater, and this lady runs it, and then she would just show these weird movies, and that's like the first place I saw Robot Monster, and let's see what else, like Rocket Attack USA, Bride of the Monster. You know, there was a big segment on Ed Wood, and it came from Hollywood too, and that's kind of the first time I ever heard of this guy. And it's like, who's this guy, you know? And then that just kind of led you down another path, you know? And so I said for that. And that movie gets a lot of grief from some people in my crowd because, like, how dare they make fun of these movies? And it's like, they're not making fun of them. They're celebrating them. And if you can't tell the difference, that's your problem, not my problem, not the movie's problem. So, So like I said, that is, you know, that's one of my, I like have a VHS tape that almost came out on DVD. But then there was like some last second right issues, and so that kind of blew up. So that went away. But I still have my VHS copy, and I'm gonna put that in my coffin when I die.
It came from Hollywood. It
came from Hollywood. I will gladly show this movie to you. It's great.
Nice.
So
you know, it sounds like, you know, it's like one of my portals for that was, this isn't even a movie, but I remember reading Fangoria.
Yeah.
And this is probably why it doesn't exist. It's coming back. You saw it's coming back.
I did.
But probably why it doesn't exist right now. I never actively bought a copy of Fangoria. I know.
That's really funny.
But I read it like really quick while my mom was shopping or something, you know? Yeah.
I remember, like, I just, like, this has been a while ago, like 5-6 years ago when they were still printing. It's like, I haven't bought like a movie mag, monster mag in a long time. And I grabbed it. I thought, you know, I'm going to get this a Fango. And I took it up to the register. And it was like $15.
Oh, my God.
Like, no wonder no one's buying this stuff anymore. And so, but yeah, I know, like, Famous Monsters was still around. You know, Fango and Starlog and all that stuff. You're reading that as a kid. And I said, yeah, it was just
finally. Oh, yes, Starlog and Wizard to a degree.
Yeah. It was just finally fun. It's like, oh, my God, look, that's real. They're moving. It's like, this is so cool.
That's awesome. All right, so do we want to keep on teen or maybe young adult? Was there anything else that jumped out to you? Any what I want to get back to real quick is like formative experiences, stuff that maybe took your mind, blew it up, and then put it back together.
Well, you know, just a quick moment. I mean, Star Wars, for God's sakes.
Oh, sure, of course.
You know, that's an obvious one because I'm, you know, when he was sort of a kid and. Yeah, almost.
I think that was more of a boy experience.
Okay. Was it? Yeah, probably.
At the time.
Sure.
Not now, but because I don't remember much hoo-ha over Star Wars when I was growing up at all.
Yeah.
Did you have a Star Wars or something like that?
Not that I can think of. Sad, I know.
Yeah.
No, I said, yeah, it's just, and that was like a communal thing, too. Like, everybody was into it.
Yep. And the toys were ubiquitous. And the, right. Yeah, yeah.
Like I said, yeah, I think I had the toys and the comics before I even saw the damn movie.
Oh,
I didn't see it until the re-release. So late 70s was a bad time. So
there were only four channels.
Yeah, no, I mean like personally, it was a bad time. So we didn't see it till like late 78.
All right, so I'll throw one out there that this is both a fantastic theater experience and a movie that is in my top 10 personally for forever and will be for a long time is. I wandered into a screening by myself. So this is a solo screening of L.A. Confidential.
Ooh.
And being by myself in the theater and like being absorbed in that. And it was really one of the first times that movies seemed like literature to me.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
And, oh, yeah.
And that you can tie that together. I think I was like a freshman in college when that came out, maybe. So I was, you know, eating all, you know, consuming all the different types of genre I could. But and I knew
consuming,
there were
that's yeah, a good consuming, word for yeah. that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but I knew there were art movies. I knew there were popular movies. I knew there was, you know, genre. I knew all that thing. But it was really the first time that movies kind of seemed like literature. It's like, oh, you can do this too.
Mm-hmm.
And not just do this, but it's like if you were to try to describe the plot of this, it would just seem impenetrable. You know, it's like how if you were to describe, you know, beyond cops try to unravel a conspiracy. It's like not just a conspiracy, but you know, everything else that happened, selling that movie was a really hard thing because where it ends up is not where it begins, not by a long shot.
Sure.
And I remember walking out of the theater feeling a little dizzy going, that was a thing. I'm different than I was before going into the theater. And I'm glad I was by myself because having to share that with somebody else wouldn't have been nearly as effective, you know, one of those kind of things.
I sort of had the same thing. When I was watching a movie called Vanishing Point.
Name, Kowalski. Occupation, driver. Transporting a supercharged Dodge Challenger from Denver to San Francisco. Background, Medal of Honor in Vietnam. Former stock and bike racer. Former cop, dishonorably discharged. Now he uses speed to get himself up. To get himself gone. Everybody's after Kowalski.
Because you think we're queers.
For one reason or another.
Is there something I can do for you?
Well, like what?
Like anything you want.
Everybody wants a piece of his hide.
Maybe kill somebody. Maybe stole that big dude of his. Maybe both.
I think that son of a...
They want to get him and put him away. but they'll have to catch him first.
Yes, I love this.
This is the movie where you're kind of watching it and you realize, okay, to me, this is there's a little something more going on here. This, mm-hmm. oh my God, this isn't about a car chase. There's some subtext. There's subtext to this stuff. And like you said, and it just kind of blew my brain. It's like, oh my God, this guy's Spartacus. He's on the road to Rome. Look at the power pole laws. They look like the crucifixes and stuff. This is not going to end well. And it does not end well, uh-uh. but it's still just kind of uplifting because it's like, and at the end, man, he's still out there, foot on the floor, heading towards another vanishing point. And it's another reason I hate Quentin Tarantino in Death Proof, because it's like, it's not about the fucking car, you know? And so, but yeah, no, like I said, and again, that's one of my top 10 movies of all time, because the movie is beautiful and it's wonderful, and there's so many layers, and it can be read so many ways. Mm-hmm. And like I said, that was the first movie. I didn't think I saw that till like I was in probably college. And again, it was just like, it blew my brain a little bit, because it's like, oh, there's a little something more going on here.
So what is the line for you? And I think this is different for everybody, but is there a line that you can identify between something being great like Vanishing Point and a pretentious piece of crap, like, you know, like a bunch of movies I could name, but it's like, at one point do you go, oh, screw you, movie?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That'd probably be a good topic for us.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. So we could do research and come back and revisit that question.
Because
I've seen movies where it's like, oh, I hate you.
Yeah.
It's like, I see what you're doing and you're not as clever as you think you are, and I hate you.
Oh,
you
know? Yeah. Yeah.
But.
off the top of my head, Jesus, I can't think of nothing. But no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, no, honey, no.
Don't do this.
No.
Okay,
no.
I got one. Every incarnation of Superman that's not the 1977 version.
Okay.
It's like, oh, I'm Space Jesus.
No!
He's not Space Jesus. Superman is not Space Jesus.
Clark.
Stop trying to wait. Yeah. Yeah. It's
like, he's not from Jerusalem. He's from Kansas.
You know, and that's the crazy thing is that it worked for me in The Matrix, where it's like, yeah, okay, he's digital Jesus, and that worked, you know, but it's like, yeah, every other thing they tried didn't work.
Well, yeah, taking another property and trying to, like, shoehorn it into your way of thinking is like, no.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, don't do that.
Please, no.
Steph, was there anything in your young adult, early adult life that rearranged your brain?
White Knights.
Okay.
Do you know it?
Oh, yeah.
Vaguely.
Gregory Hines and
Brishnikov. Gregory Hines. First of all, I never heard of either of them at that age. I was 13. I was early 80s.
Sure.
And
I'm thinking of a Phil Collins song. Am I thinking of that?
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, go ahead.
That was the theme of the movie.
Sure, gotcha.
I'm hearing the song in my head.
I'm sorry, I did not mean to derail you. I apologize.
Crash, burp. Yeah.
That is the first movie that I went to see multiple times in the theater.
Nice.
Because I loved...
Okay, no, I just have an idea. Keep going.
Brishnikov and the dancing in it and the whole storyline of the Cold War of Russia and keeping him trapped there after he had escaped or whatever, seeked asylum elsewhere. And I don't know, I fell in love with Brishnikov. Again, I love him to this day.
Well, there's some great dancing in that movie.
Oh, Gregory Hines.
He died too soon. Yeah.
He did. I was pleased to see him on Will and Grace.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That was just, oh. Yeah. I was given that as a present on beta.
That's great.
For Christmas. And yeah, I wore that tape out. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. I just remember that one very, very fondly.
Yeah, that's good. And yeah, it can rearrange your brain in different ways. It doesn't have to be structural. It doesn't have to be artistic.
Yeah,
it can be emotional.
Movies are more cerebral, I think, for you guys. I'm more of a watch it, enjoy it, not think about it too hard kind of person.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, you take lessons from these things.
I mean, do, yeah. But I don't know. I don't know. The level you guys are at movies, I'm just like,
keep us attuned to our hearts, Steph.
So yeah, no, I just thought of a question for everybody here.
Yeah.
What's the first R-rated movie you snuck into?
That I snuck into.
Purple Rain.
Okay. What was that rated R?
Purple Rain?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, you're right. It was.
There
okay.
were boobs in it.
Yeah, that would be.
We were supposed to be going to see Annie at the Conestoga Carmike Theater, and we just kind of veered off to see Prince, and we're like,
Yeah. Same here. I was supposed to be going to see Splash, and I took a left turn and went and saw Up the Creek.
Oh, no. My real answer is kind of embarrassing. Can I pick a different one?
No, it's all right. Nope.
It was The Crow.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah,
it didn't age well. You know, oh, it's like,
Finky Foo.
It's gothic awesomeness.
It is gothic awesomeness, and I think Brandon Lee would have
another
done
guy
some
who left
stuff. But I remember, I'll give an addendum to the answer. I remember watching The Boob Tube. And
oh, God.
my dad was watching it, and before it got to any of the raunchy parts, he fell asleep. So I had unfettered access to the entire show. That was eye-opening at 7 or whatever I was, you know. I also remember from our old video store days, it's like you would find something. It's like I remember liking Gremlins, so we got Ghoulies.
Oh, yeah. Like,
oh, that's not the same
There's
thing
a little
critter
at in all. The toilet. That's awful.
No, that's a trauma movie, man. That is not the same deal.
So, oh, man.
But, that's funny.
But yeah, I remember the first horror movie I was taken to when I was like 14 or 15 was Wes Craven's New Nightmare. And I remember really liking it.
Yeah.
That was a good horror movie. That's a good intro horror movie too, especially to someone who's discovering film because it's totally meta and it's, you know, it gets a little super goofy toward the end when there are like three Freddy Kruegers in the clouds reaching toward Nancy. It's like, oh, this is off the friggin' rails, man. What are we doing here?
And to me, it's like Friday the 13th, first one that led me on a deep path of an unhinged love of slasher films.
Mm-hmm.
Friday the 13th is one of the movies that I saw it on Laserdisc, I saw it on VHS, I saw it on TV, broadcast TV, I saw it on cable TV, I saw it on a DVD, Laserdisc, and then I've seen it at a drive-in, and I've seen it under a hardtop. That's the only movie that I've ever done that. Star Wars, not anything. Friday the freaking 13th. It's silly, but God damn it, I love that
that's
movie.
That's a fun flick. Yeah.
When I was 8, my uncle, who I'm no longer in contact with, took me to see Alien.
Oh!
There you go.
I can see the scariest parts of it right this second in my brain, and I've never watched it since, and I've never seen any of the other Aliens. I cannot... Okay. That is the only movie I can't physically bring myself to watch them because they...
In
it
early,
me so
damn.
Bad.
That could fuck you up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the hell he was thinking. I'm sure he got yelled at by my parents when they found out, but I was terrified.
Rightfully
that movie scares me now. Yeah,
I just remember a guy throwing up orange juicy looking stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was
it's either the birth scene or when they're beating that robot's head off.
It's the robot. Yeah.
Yeah, because I've kind of blocked a lot of it, too.
Yeah,
so it's like flashes of scenes from it.
I don't blame you. It's a good movie, but I don't blame you.
I just don't think I can watch it.
Yeah.
I did show my girls Aliens, though. Like
That's
for
more
the,
action.
The, yeah, it's an action movie for the girl power set, you know.
Sure.
And that was kind of why I brought it out. It's like, and they were like 12 and 9, 8, 8 or 9, you know. It's like, yeah, we can watch Aliens, and I'll fast forward past a couple parts, and it'll be cool, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Get away from her, you bitch. That's great. You know, you can watch that.
What surprises me, though, is I love horror movies. I like to be scared at the movies now, but at the
not
time.
Like that.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And so, let's see, I have another one. This is a movie that I kind of got led to by a website. And, you know, this is like when the internet comes around and you get these review websites of these old obscure movies. And I saw it and I tracked it down. It is unredeemable. It is silly. But it's one of these things, I ordered it through Something Weird Video, and you get that catalog.
And they do the Lord's
and,
work, yeah.
Oh my God, and it just kind of opens you up to a whole new strata of off the beaten track and film and stuff. And the name of this movie was called Kiss Me Quick. And it's this old monster.
You showed me this. Yes, you did. I remember this. Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's coming back.
And it's this old monster nudie cutie.
Yep.
And it's just these two idiots, Dr. Breedlove and Sterilox, and they're looking for the perfect women to take back to Sterilox's planet.
I remember this, yes.
And that's all it is. It's just like nothing but naked women walking around and these two guys doing this borscht belt shtick.
It's so
and
bad.
Like I said, it is irredeemably stupid. But, oh my God, is it amazing? And you get the nudie Watusi going, and it's like, oh, and then like these dance numbers would break out, and it's like, what is happening? And then these... Universal Monsters would show up, and it's like, how do these guys get past the trademark lawyers? I don't know, but this is great. And this
somebody
is awesome.
Wasn't paying attention.
I know, but then again, like I said, this kind of opened the door for things like Blood Freak and the California
oh
Axe Murderers
God,
and things
Blood
like
Freak.
That, you know? And so, yeah, I'm eternally grateful.
Would you take a moment of privilege and give us the plot of Blood Freak, please?
Blood Freak is the only anti-drug, pro-religion gore film ever made, straight out of Florida. It's about this drunken or this muscle-bound idiot who eats some tainted turkey meat, and he turns into a giant were-turkey.
And
he's also addicted to drugs, so he has to kill addicts so he can drink their heroin-laced
blood. Yep.
And in between time, he's wooing this girl, and this girl is willing to have sex with the turkey monster.
Is there a sex scene?
Yes, there is. But she's not sure if she can marry it because she wonders what their kids will look like. And at the end, they all find Jesus, and there's redemption, and everyone's saved.
Of course they do.
Of course they do.
And the best line from it is, during the sex scene, the lights turn off, and you hear, "Oh, Herschel, gobble, gobble, gobble."
Blood Freak.
You know what? I'm
going to
call
it soon, won't you?
I'm
going to
call that one of my formative movies. Blood Freak.
You're welcome.
Herschel. Oh. Herschel. Oh my God.
Oh my God. I remember showing that movie. It's like Sarah.
Sometimes I feel like a drug dealer with this shit. You guys gotta watch
it. It's the best.
Oh man, you gotta watch it.
I got this.
Yeah. Hey, little boy. Little boy, you wanna watch this film?
No.
You're gonna watch it anyway.
I'm bored. I'm walking out of this. Oh my God, that's great. Yeah. And I love moments like that. Yeah. That I'm going to describe them to you, but you're not going to believe it.
You're not
going to
believe it. Yeah, I could draw you a picture. You still won't believe it. You think I'm crazy, but nope, it happened.
Exactly. You know, yeah, I could throw some formative B-Fest movies out like that. I remember the first time doing Plan 9 and the plates hitting the sky. That kind of rejiggering my understanding of things a little bit.
Yeah, I spent a good deal of my teenage years at the Dream Theater in Monterey every weekend at midnight seeing Rock and Roll High School and Rocky Horror.
Nice.
Oh, that's double a good feature.
I used to play Janet.
Oh, that's cool.
When I got used to the first time I went, I had no idea what to expect at Rocky, and mm-hmm. I got... I had no idea, but I never got called out of the Virgin, so that was good.
I think I've told that story where the first time I went to Rocky Horror, they said, "Who's never done this before?" And the girl I was with put her hand on my chest and said, "Sit down, stay seated." And I was very glad she did.
Yeah,
I appreciate Angela to this day doing that. That was,
I think like the closest I think I've ever come to like an actual grindhouse experience, sort of, is you remember the Starship 9 in Lincoln?
Oh, God, I remember the Starship 9.
I saw Jurassic Park there in its 72nd week. And the print was destroyed. There were chunks of that movie missing. So it was like, you go along and be like, and it would kind of go white for a second, and then the movie would start again, and it's like, this is amazing! And so like, the whole part where they introduced the raptors, that scene, gone. You know? And so the movie was like maybe 45 minutes long, but it's like, this is great! And so...
I love this. Yeah, I could do a whole episode on my experiences at the Starship Nine. Oh my God, teenage philandering and sneaking into movies and sneaking other stuff into that. Oh my God, when that tore down, I cried because that was my jam, man. I got into a fist fight outside of that theater once. That place. Anyway. Oh. And I'm going to go just remember some stuff for a while. Hey, hit pause. I'll come back in a couple minutes.
He's crying. Look at that. There's a single tear rolling down the street. That's a moment of silence from the Starship 9, please.
Burp. All right. So let's close out this. Let's close it out with stuff that maybe modern stuff that you thought that has affected you, that has done stuff you didn't think was possible. Because if we are, you know, we are all... middle-aged, or can film and cult cinema still surprise us? Can you still run into stuff that changes the way you think things can be done?
Oh, I think so. To me, you know, anything like Studio Ghibli does.
Oh man, good pull.
Yeah, because I all these the best movies last year you know, Shape of Water won the Oscar, whatever. The best movie last year about an aquatic romance, you know, interspecies romance was actually The Red Turtle.
Never saw it.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's just about, like, the shipwrecked sailor, and it's like kind of a folklorish thing. And there's a turtle, but it's really a lady, and they sort of fall in love, and it's like life on it. It's really good.
Studio Ghibli does amazing stuff.
And so,
you know, the thing that changed it for me? Iron Man. Yeah. When Nick Fury walked out on stage, I'm like, they're not going to do that. And then they kept doing it, and they kept doing it. It's like, oh, my God, I get a superhero soap opera? What did I do that made me, you know, that made me good enough to deserve this? Are you kidding? No. I get an interconnected superhero soap opera for like a decade? Yes, please. I will sign up for that all the time. It wasn't, of course, artistically anything amazing, but... Oh my God!
I sure was entertained.
I didn't think they could do that, and they did that. And then Spider-Man showed up, and then, you know, they fixed all the things that were wrong with all the superhero. I loved it. I loved the fact that they were able to do that, and I get my superhero soap opera. Man, it just made me so happy.
Those other things too, you know, the burgeoning foreign market. You get a lot more foreign films mm-hmm. that are easier access to. You know, the good, the bad, and the weird things like that.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Yeah, and. Jim Ho Bong, I can't remember the name.
Oh, the guy who did The Host and Okja and Snowpiercer. Did you see Snowpiercer?
So, like I said, it's just more access, and it just seems more cross-pollination all over the place. So you see some kind of, you'll see, like, watch a movie, it's like, oh, that's like Korean sensibilities, you know, or this, mm-hmm. oh, that's Japanese, you know, that kind of thing. You just kind of see the influences cross-pollinating, you know. Or things like The Raid. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God.
Or Ouch. Oh, my God, Ouch, the movie, you know, that kind of thing. And so...
Head smash the motion picture.
Yeah, so like we don't have to wait for the American remake anymore. We can
We can go see it, and that is a blessing, you know. Or see it before the American remake. Or,
right. Yeah. Please God, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and I love that. But you have to have that foundation of being curious about it in the first place. Right. You know, and that's my old man soapbox.
Yeah. You know, one of the craziest things I wanted to bring this up, and actually. One of the most influential things on my film watching experiences weren't films themselves, but it was a series of books. Hmm. Cult Movies by Danny Perry.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I know Patton Oswalt mentions those in that.
Silver Screen Fiend
and stuff. And he's like wrenching and he's like, I've read those. And I went on a fool's errand to try to rewatch all of them and review all of them. It ended in disaster, but it was a lot of fun.
How did it end in disaster?
Couldn't
find stuff?
I could find stuff real easy, but I got way too far ahead of myself because like I had like had 20 reviews written, but I'd seen like 50 films, and they try to go back and write something up, and I was like, you know, what to happen in this movie? I don't remember. And so I'd love to take another run at it because like I said, just some amazing stuff, and I just love it because I think Danny Perry influenced me more than anything because it just kind of opened your mind to the nuts and bolts
of the
actual filmmaking and, you know, behind the scenes scuttlebutt, and you'll kind of set your mind frame of the era when the film was made. And what the influences were and things like that. And so that was kind of eye-opening.
Do you know what that sort of does for me? And you can speak to this too, is the idea that when you know those nuts and bolts, when something works, it becomes all the more amazing. You know what I mean? It's like when you get a classic out of something like Vanishing Point that could have easily ended in fire because everyone was high all the time and nobody had any money.
Or the same, like I said, too. It's like you read the backstory, it's like, how the hell they got anything out of that? I will never know. And it just looks amazing on screen.
Yeah. And so. And some great stuff were, you know, in screen history or accidents. Mm-hmm.
On the spot.
And it makes it so much richer when you know, oh, yeah, that was an improv line. Oh, this didn't work, so they had to do this, and that's why it happened, you know. And I love that sort of stuff.
I know it's one of my favorite points. He was talking about actually circling back to Plan 9 from Outer Space. He was actually defending Ed Wood and saying the badness was on purpose to hide his message of acceptance.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
But it was interesting, and he was actually the first one. He was actually the first one to point out in Night of the Living Dead, you know, how the hero basically keeps everybody out of the basement, but then he survives by going to the basement. Mm-hmm. I know that doesn't work out for him in the end, but it's like, does anybody else notice this? And I'm like, no. It's like, oh my God, he's right. And, you know, this is kind of, I find that interesting.
That is interesting, and I bet you that's an accident. I bet you they weren't thinking, you know, because. Yeah, when you know...
He basically forces everybody to get out of the basement. He gets everybody killed, and then he essentially survives the Night of the Living Dead by hiding in the basement.
Huh. That puts a whole other spin on that I never said,
in the end, it didn't work out for him. No, sure enough. But it's just, I just found that, and it's like, Ah! So it's like just coming at something from a different angle.
Fascinating.
So, yeah.
All right, well, let's do a grab bag. Did we miss anything? Anything that you wanted to mention that was formative to you that you didn't mention for whatever reason?
Bad movies, Thing from Another World, or old B movies, I guess. Yeah. Just basically means, you know, these things can be really, really good.
Yes.
Mario Bava's Blood and Black Lace, something horrific can also be very beautiful.
Yeah, and that was part of your trying to trace back the first slasher movie,
right?
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Yep.
Project that ended in the Virgin Spring, was it?
Part of it, yeah.
Part of it, yep. Yeah. Okay, anything, Steph, that we missed for you?
Well, I was just going to talk a little bit about, and I know it's not on the tangent of B-movies and stuff, but I got to...
Get us out of our B-movie hellhole.
Sorry, no, it's okay. Not a hellhole. It's
okay. That's okay.
The Harry Potter movies.
You know what?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring that up because it was like a decade of wonderful time spent bonding with my daughter.
That's nice. Cool. That's very
and
cool.
And as an adult, you know, so I look back on those movies, and I know some of them are a little, you know, and some of them are wonderful, but spending that time with my daughter, anticipating the movies, going to see them at midnight, re-seeing them at midnight, you know, and the books too, of course, we do the midnight book release party and then spend the whole weekend devouring.
That's a good one.
You know, I mean, it's Harry Potter, I know, and it's uber popular and everything, but it meant a lot to me to spend that time with my kid, and I think it helped us in the relationship we have now.
So. Yeah. I heard a story once where when J.K. Rowling was first getting successful, she had a kid come up and was very upset that so many other people had found the book. She goes, because this is my book, you know, and she relayed that story. Aww. And I'm like, yeah.
That's sweet.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
Yeah, J.K.'s kind of my hero. I love her.
She's got a pair of balls on her, man.
Yeah, she does. I like J.K. Yeah, she does.
I think she's kind of great.
That's all I want.
No, I like it. I like it. All right, so let's dive into recommendations for the Fortnite, for the 2-week period, okay. Right?
Yeah.
What we're seeing, reading, watching, experiencing that we want to talk about. I am. I just finished up A Head Full of Ghosts by Paul Tremblay. Have you heard of this?
This book?
It's a book. Okay. Yes. And it is it's going to be a movie pretty soon. So if you want to jump on the bandwagon, do it now. It's an exorcism story. And it is people have called it a modern horror classic. I am tilting toward agreeing on that because it's told from the it's a family with two daughters, and it's told from the perspective of the younger sister. So they start off just kind of establishing the relationship with this, you know, between these sisters, and then things start to turn, and the things that turn are like foul, but in a very specific way, you know, like within the context of this relationship. And then a TV crew moves in and things get weird, and it's very good, called A Head Full of Ghosts. And it's going to be a movie pretty soon. And it's not it always walks that line between, is this supernatural or is it not supernatural? So it's not like an insidious jump out and scare you sort of thing. It's just like, oh man, that's messed up. Uh-huh. You know? And one of those kind of things. And it's told from a very innocent perspective, and then they flash forward to the child as an adult and kind of bounce around a little bit and plays with the nature of what remembering something through the lens of pop culture is like, because they had a TV show filming her when she was a kid, so that's like part of a recollection of it. And it's just really smart and really good, called A Head Full of Ghosts.
Okay.
And you can find it on Kindle for like $1.99. If you're looking at it during the right time. It's been on sale recently. So it's like, yeah, go find that. Nice. That's really good. That's definitely worth a couple bucks.
Okay.
Who's got something they're watching?
I have two things.
Do it.
And they're stupid.
No!
Well, no, one of them is, and one of them isn't. But I've been sick recently, and I had a week where I wasn't at work, and I watched Jessica Jones.
Yeah, okay. I'm on episode 8.
And I enjoyed it. But I didn't enjoy it as much as the first season. And I'm hearing that a lot from people.
You know,
it's still really good.
It's
when
still
you looked
rare,
at the rest of the
yes,
Marvel.
Yes.
I still, you know, I'm sure it's probably, you know, they're contractually obligated to X amount of episodes. But I think that would have been so better served if they chopped it down to 8 episodes.
Yeah.
Because one of my biggest problems with all of them is like, my God, there's a lot of wheel spinning in those shows.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, we've already established this.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to establish it again. Where, you know, like Patsy's on, or Trisha's on her drug kick, you know,
on the
super soldier serum juice. And it's like, we got it. And so move on. But no, I really liked it. You know, I liked the crazy mom.
Yeah, you know, I'm just getting into that.
And
don't spoil it too much.
I'm not going to spoil it too much. Yeah, and it's just, yeah, but at the end of the day, it's like, you know, Luke Cage was daddy issues, and like, this is mommy issues. And mm-hmm. it's like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, the first one, was, I don't mind it having like an overarching theme. Because yeah. the first one was like the superhero survivor of sexual assault. You know, sure. it was basically what it was, and it was brilliant. I thought yeah. it was really, really good.
I think, and another thing too, I think they need more, they have A, B, C, and D plots, but they're with different characters. I think Jessica Jones could have used a few more A, B, C mm-hmm. plots to fill out the over arc, the overreaching arc, you know, with her and her mom. And because I thought the meat boy was going to be her brother, but it was her mom. Oh, spoilers! Sorry. And
the meat boy's her mom.
Sorry.
Burp.
So, but I said in the end, I liked it mostly because, like I said, I just really liked Kristen Ritter.
Mm-hmm. She is so good.
Yeah, and
I mean, she I don't want to say it's. She does a really good job of humanizing what would be hard to yeah. rationalize behavior. Yeah. You know?
I was just like thinking about this. It's like, okay, take Age of Ultron and try to spread that out over 12 episodes. And it's like, probably a lot of wheel spinning yeah. too, you know? Yeah. And so, yeah, I just think those series would be better served if they chopped it down to like yeah. 8 episodes.
Did you notice that every one of those was written and directed by a woman?
I did.
I did not.
I did too.
I did.
Thought that was awesome.
Aces.
Yeah. So Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones. And the other one is I have made my way through 104 episodes of Chopped. Hulu. Because I'm a little bit of a foodie. I love to cook and I like really good food, and watching Chopped is my favorite cooking contest thing because mm-hmm. they, you know, they have to take these weird basket ingredients and, you know, turn it into a meal for mm-hmm. the judges, and the judges are all high and mighty and, you know, this needs more acid and all this stuff. And I loved it, and I didn't get tired of watching it, but it was just kind of something I just stuck on in the background while I, you know, recovered from being sick, and I like it.
Yeah.
There's, well, and there's 104 episodes on Hulu.
Because you introduced me to this one that I haven't watched. I nailed it.
Did you watch Nailed It?
I have not yet.
Six episodes on Netflix.
God.
The basic premise is people who suck at cooking are asked to do monumentally complicated cooking things, and they invariably fail. And I remember we were watching one episode, my family was, and the guy kind of got it right. And I'm like, no, I am not here for competence. I am here for people screwing it up so bad that you can't recognize what they were doing in the first place.
I want my Pinterest fails.
Oh, we laughed so hard. Oh, my God.
I said laugh really hard, and I really
did
liked
you
it.
Did
I
you
did.
Watch
I watched a couple more episodes. It was really funny.
It is.
And I highly recommend that. Another one, a movie I watched. I watched this again. I saw this in the theater last year. It was a Super Dark Times. This is currently streaming on Netflix. It's sort of a thriller. It's very, very good. And I'm watching it, and it's almost 2 hours long. And I'm thinking, you know, if they cut like 20 minutes out, maybe it was a little tighter stuff. But it's like, I'm damned if I could tell you where to cut, because it's really good. The gist of it is, these kids accidentally kill another kid, and they hide the body, they hide the weapon, and then it's basically splits off. The one kid is like, it's like Attack of the Guilty Conscience, and it's like slips into paranoia, and he's afraid in trying to keep the conspiracy going to cover this up, while the other kid kind of like goes completely off the rails and decides that, you know, okay, that was almost maybe not necessarily fun, but I'm going to keep killing people. And And like I said, it's in the title, Super Dark Times, but it's...
What's it available
on? Netflix. Streaming for free, so highly recommend that one.
Cool, sounds good. Well, that sounds like a podcast to me.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you for listening. We appreciate it. And if you want to give us a rating or jump on our Facebook page and tell us what some of your formative film experiences are, we would love to hear it. Thank you so much. You've been listening to The Atomic Weight of Cheese, where cult cinema is real life and real life is frequently cult cinema. You can visit our website at theatomicweightofcheese.com, follow us on Twitter at @AWOCpodcast, see us on Facebook at facebook.com/atomicweightofcheese, or shoot us an email at atomicweightofcheese@gmail.com. We love your feedback. Meh, meh, burp, burp, burp.